Welcome to Health Center in the Catskills on WIOX Radio. I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program, where we focus on the impact of local, state, national, and global issues on the health of the individuals, families, and communities in the Catskill region. While mental health issues continue to challenge our local communities as well as the state and the country, what is New York State doing or not doing to promote mental health and ensure that people who need help with mental health issues are able to get it? Today on Health Center in the Catskills, I'm going to talk with James Norton, the Government and Community Affairs Manager for NAMI New York State. That's the National Alliance on Mental Illness. But first, Margaretville Hospital continues its efforts to build out primary care in our region. And the new providers, among the new providers at the hospital's primary care practice is a nurse practitioner, Erin Black, and I'm delighted to have her join me in the studio. Welcome, Erin, to Health Center in the Catskills.
Hi, Diana. Thank you.
Yeah. So when did you start primary care here at Margaretville Hospital?
I will officially start seeing patients at APS on Tuesday. I have been with the practice since December of this last year. I had to step away for a little while for my own medical health conditions, which was eye-opening to be on the other side of everything, of course. But I'm back, and I'm full-time, and I'm here and ready for our community.
Great. So what surprised you in your experience as a patient?
Oh, you think you understand the complexities of the system and, you know, the, I guess, red tape or, you know, yeah. another way you want to put these kind of things. But how much it matters to be communicative with your patient and compassionate, because, you know, it's hard to navigate the system as a provider. So I can, for a limited amount of time, I could only imagine what it was like to be a patient. And now understanding, you know, how hard it can be to communicate between this provider, another provider, insurance companies, you know, when you need a battery of tests or different medications and you are trying to get these things approved for yourself, you really have to... You have to push as much as you can, and that's difficult to do when you're sick. Really understanding how frustrating it can be to be a patient.
and you're a nurse, so so if it's hard for you,
exactly,
what happens to somebody who's not in healthcare?
I'm relatively healthy, even though I have my own health conditions, so I can't imagine what it's like for somebody who, you know, doesn't have, you know, the energy or the capabilities that I still currently have.
Well let's hear, learn a little bit about you. Let's talk about why you became a nurse in the first place.
I became a nurse because I always had this curiosity, sociological perspective, like what drives people and why do, you know, two people who have the same exact diagnosis have vastly different outcomes? And when I was in my senior year in high school, we did a little experiment where we went around to our different teachers and said, where do you see me? What do you think I could do? And it was social work, nurse. And so I finally went home to my parents and my dad said, you better be a nurse. And I thought, yeah, all right, that sounds good. I was young and I'm, you know, you never know what you want to be when you're 18 years old. But I thought, all right, this person knows me. So yeah, let's give this a shot. It sounds good. And as soon as I started my nursing program in Sullivan County, I was like, this is it. For sure.
So where did you go in Sullivan County?
So I went to SUNY Sullivan for my associate's degree.
Great.
Then I went on for my bachelor's and my master's in Binghamton.
At University of SUNY University Binghamton.
SUNY Binghamton, that's right.
Yeah, it's a really good school.
Yeah, I loved my time there. Everybody is really wonderful up there.
So then where'd you work after you graduated?
I spent a little bit of time at the Roscoe Rehab for about 2 years when I first graduated as an RN. And I learned so much at the nursing home there. There are so many pearls of wisdom to be gotten from that community. And I developed a lot of skills while I was there. And after that time, I went back up to Binghamton to do my bachelor's. I worked at Lord's for a little while, which I think now is Garnet. In any case, to do med surge.
Where is this?
Lord's Hospital's in Binghamton.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Guthrie. They're Guthrie now.
Guthrie.
Yeah. And I did my bachelor's up there. And I came back home after my bachelor's. I spent 10 years in ICU, which I intentionally chose to go to ICU because I knew that I would learn a lot quickly. And I wanted to really develop my skills and understand, you know, the pathophysiology of all of these, you know, different disease management and things like that.
And the ICU being the intensive care unit.
Yes, at Kingston. And yeah. I spent 10 years there. And it was very rewarding. You know, there's nothing like being there for patients and their families at, you know, really difficult times in their lives. So, yes, I did learn a lot medically, yeah. But I also learned a lot, socially and as a human, as a person. Mm. And then I went back up to Binghamton for my master's degree.
And your master's is in?
Master's, so my FNP, family nurse practitioner. While I was there, I was awarded a HRSA grant.
Which is the Health Services and Resource Administration.
Yes. Right.
HRSA. Yeah.
Yes.
Health Services and Resources Administration.
Yep, yeah, that's right. Which kind of happened out of the blue. It wasn't something that I applied for, but life happens for me. So as I was coordinating my classes based on what I wanted to learn, which ended up being a lot of crossover with public health classes, they came to me and they said, you know, you qualify for this HRSA grant, and this is what it's about. You're going to focus your master's degree on community health. So yes, you'll of course still be treating people at, you know, the individual level, but you will learn the community health of a community. And so part of my master's project was to choose a community and do a deep dive into the social determinants of health and determine needs of that community. And from there, you will learn about what it takes to provide services to these rural communities, mm-hmm. and how involved it can be to try to implement services for these places.
And what was the focus of that project?
So we were given a choice, you know, whatever you determined was the need for the community based on your investigation. I was newly postpartum, so it wasn't hard for me to find a need for honing in on prenatal and postnatal needs of women in rural communities, because it's difficult to get to, you know, your offices, and you have to go very frequently. And that's if you have a healthy child, a healthy newborn. So I worked with the public health in Sullivan County to develop a assessment tool to see, you know, where are the gaps in care for these patients, and also put together a resource map, if you will, for you know, services that are available.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Mm-hmm. I mean, Delaware County is the maternity care desert. Mm-hmm. You cannot deliver a baby here unless you go to the emergency room. And I don't know if you knew, but what was the hospital? It might have been, there was a hospital near Troy or Schenectady that was closing its maternity services. And they said the alternative was that women could deliver in an emergency room. And I can't imagine anything worse, unless you're having a true emergency. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine anything worse than sitting in an emergency room trying to go through labor and delivery.
That sounds awful.
Yeah, it was not the right response. So
yeah.
it's a real concern here, mm-hmm. that, and I've done some programming on that. So so then you decided you did this nurse practitioner program. Why?
When I was in ICU, I of course got a lot of this is what happens when chronic diseases are not managed well. This is the result of either mismanagement or, you know, not catching things early, things like that. And I thought,
or patients not making the lifestyle changes that they need to live healthier.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. However, the, you know, mismanagement happens. Uh-huh. Yeah. And I thought I have learned a lot of skills here, and I think it's time to now take it upstream and kind of come back to my original love, which is, you know, the health of a community and the social determinants of health and what drives people. So let's take this upstream, and that lands you at primary care, FNP.
And so you've recently been doing outreach in the community, mm-hmm. going to some community events. Mm-hmm. Tell us about some of that.
Yeah, so there is a farmer's market in Delhi that you will see Margaretville at just about every Wednesday. Respiratory therapy, Terry, you'll see her there
Oster
frequently.
Oster Hoat, she's been on the program several times.
Yes,
yeah.
Oh, good, okay.
Yeah.
So getting out in the community, letting people know that we are here, we are revamping, we are getting more providers, there are specialists, there are a lot of services that are available that either weren't for some time or were underutilized, and we're trying to let people know, you know, we're here and we're trying to be better resources for the community.
Yeah, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, that was, we did the same kind of outreach at Senior Fun Day in Walton last week as well. Or we've reached a lot of people.
Good. Mm-hmm. And so say something about some of those specialty services that are now coming up here.
Hmm. Yeah, so we have intermittently throughout the month, neurology, cardiology. We have GYN coming.
By the way, mm-hmm. I have gone to Ellie Wagner. She's a women's health nurse practitioner, a physician assistant.
Right.
And she's excellent. I was really impressed with the care that I got from her.
Everybody that comes is wonderful. We have general surge that comes intermittently as well. Yeah. Everybody is really wonderful. And they're on board. They're here to serve the community as well.
Great. Yeah. So neurology, cardiology, you have a pulmonologist too, right?
Yep.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. I have a friend who just saw a pulmonologist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. Any other services? Do you have dermatology?
Not yet. Mm-hmm. We have general surge who sometimes will do, you know, if there are simple dermatology things that are applicable for him.
Yeah.
But not yet. Yeah. Podiatry is one that's frequently requested.
Right.
There are services in the area. They're not through APS currently, but we're aware of the need.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Good. 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 I must say that there's, I believe, now a gerontologist at the nursing home, and certainly the need in our community that's an aging community mm-hmm. for somebody with that kind of specialty background really is great.
Yeah.
You've also been working closely with Avi Rosenthal, who's mm-hmm. with the behavioral health program at the hospital. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing with him.
Avi. Avi, what have I and Avi have been having a lot of conversations behind the screens. So part of the HRSA grant also focused on medications for opioid use disorder, substance use disorder. And that was going to be my second pick for my master's graduation project. And we're trying to get some funding, some grants to develop a portable and on the go, a bus to get out into the community to reach these people that have substance use disorder who want to get, you know, medication assistance, but, you know, they can't get to the area or what have you. So we're still in the infancy of these things, but that's our baby passion, I suppose, that we share.
And I will have Avi Rosenthal on one of these days to talk about that behavioral health program and the substance use program, because he's really been doing a major effort and really good work on trying to build out that service that we so much need in mm-hmm. this part of the county. And he's just been so busy, but he promises me he'll come on. So listeners,
he will. If he says it,
yes,
he will.
So you'll hear more about that in the future. So tell us about how you think about primary care. If somebody's listening, what's your philosophy about primary care and what it should look like and how you approach patients?
It has to be a partnership. There's a saying in healthcare that I can't care more about your care than you care about your care. And it's not to say that, you know, the pressure is on the patient, but it really has to be a collaboration. You know, you have to be able to come to appointments prepared to discuss honestly what's going on. And when we develop a plan of care together, I'll make recommendations. We will try to find out what are your goals for your health care? How can we get to your goals? Because that's what it's all about. What do you need? Where do you want to see yourself in your health? And once that plan of care is developed, it's really important for patients to follow through. Come back if you need additional support, of course. But yeah, you know, the physicians, the providers are only a piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. And so what if you were recommending that I have a bone density test and I say, I'm not going to do that. I don't want to do it because I wouldn't take the medication that makes your jaw necrotic.
So in medicine, this is what we do in medicine. We say these are the outcomes, these are the findings of doing these kind of tests. And preventative care is a wonderful thing as far as helping people, you know, achieve goals, live meaningful, long lives. So there are other avenues to pursue depending on the results of said bone scan. It doesn't have to be this medication or that medication. But also there are things that can be done to alleviate or, you know, mitigate side effects that people are concerned about. You know, when, you know, people hear about side effects, they say, I don't want to have that. Of course, nobody wants to have side effects, but there are things that we can do. So that's our role. Our role is to provide information. And if at the end of all of that information, we can say you are now making an informed decision, then that's your right.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's important. This discussion is important from the standpoint of the public understanding that it is a conversation you're having with this person, and you really want a trusting relationship. Mm-hmm. That if I feel like I'm not having that test done, I can tell you it's not a test I want, that I want to go through. You'll tell me why you think I should have it, mm-hmm. and I'll make a decision based on that. And it is that trust is so important, I think,
yeah.
with primary care providers.
Absolutely, because, you know, when you're trying to make recommendations, if the patient is not trusting, it can seem bossy or, you know, it can seem like they're not trying to meet you and where you are and your goals. And if we're trying to investigate, you know, why don't you want to have the exam? To ask questions like that can seem like it's a pushback, and it's not necessarily. It's all information gathering. It's all just trying to understand so that, again, we can meet you where you want to be.
So, Erin, this is a small community, and for some people, the idea of going to somebody here, they worry about, will my information be confidential? Who's it going to be shared with? What would you say to somebody who had that concern?
We never share information with anybody that doesn't require the information in order to influence your care. So we don't discuss, you know, patient private information with anybody. It's hard to ensure that with people when, you know, if they are, you know, untrusting of the system as it is. But it's just as simple as that. We just don't discuss private patient information.
Yeah.
We just don't. You know, we took an oath and we take it seriously.
Yeah. So. Plus, there's what's called HIPAA, the Health Insurance Protection and Privacy and Portability Act, that if you did disclose my information, you could get charged. I don't know what the charges are, but mm-hmm. I know you could get charged. So,
yeah.
So there's lots of sort of barriers there for protecting your, or not barriers, but safeguards for protecting your private information.
Sure, sure. I mean, you yeah. know, like I said, we took an oath and we take it seriously, but we also, we take our licenses seriously, yeah. of course. Yeah, we worked hard to earn these things, and yeah.
I have
not going to jeopardize those things.
I actually have a colleague who actually worked at Sloan, and during COVID, she looked up for somebody in her community. She looked up what their care was, and they knew that she was not authorized to do that. And she lost her job over it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
almost lost her license.
Oh, yeah. No, it's taken very seriously. Yeah.
So, yeah, good on you. So your practice is at the Palin Building. Now, the Palin Building is an old, dreary building, I'm going to be honest. So I'm going to say this stuff for transparency, I should have said. I'm on the board of Margaretville Hospital. And Aaron, you're with Advanced Physician Services that is in the Palin Building on the grounds of Margaretville Hospital. But you theoretically report up to Westchester Medical Center's Advanced Physician Services. Those are all the physicians, PAs, nurse practitioners. Is that right?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but we all know that Palin Building is not in good shape.
It's well-loved.
It's well-loved. That's a good way to say that. Yes, it's well-loved.
It's well-loved.
Oh, my. So we also have been raising money to do a facelift on that building. Tell us about where things are at with overhauling that building.
Things, as far as I know, are still in the infancy, still working on getting contractors, and we haven't drawn plans yet that I'm aware of, but we're all very eager. And it's not just the building that needs a revamp. Like, the point of revamping the building is not to have something shiny and new. We like shiny and new and modern, but the point is those things allow for better patient care, right? So better flow throughout the building, allowing patients to have a better experience. The doctors and the nurses and the specialists can collaborate more easily. And all of those things lead to better patient outcomes.
Yeah. So just so people know, we're still waiting for the heliport to be finished.
Mm-hmm.
It's got the posts in, and my understanding is the priority right now is getting that helipad done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But hopefully, we've raised a good bit of money for the Palin Building, so hopefully that will come about sooner rather than later.
Yes, we are excited. So, and of course, the plan is to have the providers input when plans are finally drawn, so that we can say, this would be really great if we could have this, or that's going to create an obstacle here, you know.
So I'll share with you a story about years ago. They didn't consult the nursing staff, including in hospitals when they were remodeling units. And a hospital that will remain unnamed in Manhattan was an orthopedic floor. They were getting new elevators in the building. Well, the beds wouldn't fit on the elevator, and the clinical nurse specialist in orthopedics was irate. She said, "How could you have done this without consulting with us and what our needs are with these patients?"
Mm-hmm.
And so, we're insisting that you guys.
I think that if you're in medicine, you have experienced this. whether you're a patient or a provider, I'm sure that you've experienced something. I mean, hopefully not to that degree, but you've certainly experienced something like that where, you know, somebody didn't think that design through, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, how could you not do it? Mm-hmm. How could you not? So if somebody wants to make an appointment with you, how can they do so?
Mm-hmm. So you can call the scheduling system, which is still the Margaretville APS number, which is 845-586-3888. And there is currently a call system in place. And what the call system does will take some information from you and put you in with a provider who is either nearest for you if you're looking for, you know, an acute visit, or if you are already an established patient, figuring out what's, you know, most appropriate for you based on your needs.
Great.
There's an online scheduling as well if you wanted to do online scheduling.
So there's a phone number?
Mm-hmm.
Can you get that?
Yep, so I gave the APS number.
One more time.
Mm-hmm. It's 845-586-3888. There is, this is new, actually, within the last couple of months, the call center. So it used to be when you would call the number, you would get the front desk at APS immediately. It's now the call center. You can still reach the front desk through the automated system. You just have to listen for it appropriately. But the call center has allowed for more patients to schedule.
So if you want appointments, you call 845-586-3888 and you say that you want an appointment for Erin, E-R-I-N, Black, family nurse practitioner. And I would start calling on Monday and see if you can get your appointment. I think you'd be a fabulous provider, Erin. Just one more question. Is it possible to get same-day appointments?
Yes. Yeah, you can get same-day appointments, depending on the schedule, of course. But if there's availability, you can get same-day appointments for simple things. So we don't have the same, capabilities as an urgent care, say, or the ER next door, of course. So, I have a cough. I've not been feeling well for the past couple of days. I think I might have a UTI. Simple things like that. We won't be able to manage chronic problems during your acute visit. Which can be a barrier sometimes because, this is rural healthcare and there are always more than one thing going on. But they're limited appointments and they're short, so we address as much as we can as far as the acute concern.
Yeah. Great. Well, that's good news to know. It's been an issue, of course, when people didn't want to go to the emergency room and it was like, where can I? There's no mm-hmm. urgent care center here. You mm-hmm. can't be a critical access hospital and have an urgent care center.
Right.
So the fact that there are same-day appointments that are available for acute problems is good to know.
Yeah.
If you're seriously ill, you want to go to that emergency room. But if... I've gotten same-day appointments for things like a really bad sore throat mm-hmm. or, and these days, somebody who has explosive diarrhea as we're typifying the new foodborne illness, cyclospora. Well, Erin Black, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Welcome.
Thank you
to
so much.
Our community, although you've been in this community and live up in Dennington?
Denning.
So
Big Indian. Most people know Big Indian.
Yeah. And you grew up here, so it's great to have somebody who grew up here, knows the community. Welcome.
Thank you
welcome.
Very much. Homegrown. We have a term for me. I'm homegrown.
Yes. All right. Thank you so much.